794 Dorgel, June 8, 2008, lecture 2.2 and 3, the user system interface. Okay, so the interface with the user is clearly an important element of software. That's what the user sees and users interact with, and if that's not done well, no matter how well the software works otherwise, people have difficulties. Well, actually, for some software. And there, if there's a piece of software that only 3 people use in the world, and they can be trained, interface is not important. Or if it's coming behind the scenes, obviously, for an operating system, to the extent that you have to do something with it and give it commands, it's important. But for some software, it just runs behind the scenes, it's not important. But for most of the things, kind of things you will evaluate, it is important. And the design space for the user interface is more complex and large than it's usually assumed. I mean, you may hear some programs have a graphical user interface. There may be some functions where you have to go command line. So the user interface actually can change from one function to the other. And so that's something you need to keep in mind. Page 29 has just an overview. So I will spend most time in looking at the interaction styles. Okay. So the solid referrals was command set, and you type something in. And for that, you need to know the command. Unless you have a cheat sheet, then you can look at this. So this is this requires high cognitive load. You need to recall the commands rather than just recognize them. The structure of the command might be helpful. So, I mean, one interface that's a command-driven interface is SQL. You specify queries in some of the query language. So people think that who's talking about command driven stuff exists there. And there are still plenty of people who use Unix in a command line. And I don't know how you do your RAM account, whether you have list, file list, what is it? I forget the commands. But they are list the directory, and they're some FTP clients, you still have to use commands. So that could be a very simple command, like list directory, but there could also be more complex, where you have an action and an object it applies to. The first two SQL commands, show M1, will give the structure of a table called M1. Select from M1 for condition. So the second command will select from a table M1 those rows where the course number is FDSD 101. Assume M1 is a table of course offerings. And so there may be multiple offerings of that same course. Sometimes commands have options. Actually, the DIR is a DOS command. There's an equivalent command with similar options in Unix. And so the /W in this case is not the object to which it's displayed, to which it's applied. It's an option selection. Instead of listing the files one under the other, it will list them in this classes themes. I think in the Windows directory, the default is where they have all these icons, which is for the boots. Because you don't see much on the screen, the icons really don't help much. But then you have multiple columns of file names, which lets you list more files on the screen. Personally, I don't like it because I have to scroll right and down, and I'm just used to scrolling down. So the options in the command line you could specify. To learn commands and to remember them, it's important that the commands have good structure. So the copy command would always be easiest if you have it from to. That's how you think about it mentally. You don't think about copy to this file from that file. And of course some command language could do it that way, but it would be counterintuitive. You know, we talked about intuitiveness, it would be counterintuitive. Now, I gave you another example that most people wouldn't look at as command, but if the truth be known, if you press the right arrow key to move the cursor one to the right, it's a command. You have to know that is, you input something, but it's not a command line, but you're still inputting something from the keyboard. The keyboard shortcuts are actually commands. In WordPerfect, I think there may be other applications that do this similarly. If you just press the right arrow key, the action is applied to one character. So the object to which is applied is sort of given. But then you can also select as an object a root. And you do that by simply saying control right arrow. And what they do in terms of consistency, pressing the control key simultaneously with the command key always means apply to a whole group. Now, if they were to do this even better, then Alt arrow would apply to seconds, and then we still look for one that does a paragraph. Maybe control Alt. They don't really use shift right arrow. That's another option that could be used. Now, what would be the best object in this case? A line? I mean, for processing text, a line or a sentence? Very rarely do you see word processing keys that apply to sentence.
Yeah, it's always on the line.
It's always based on the line. A typical example of what's easy for the programmer goes in the interface.
Yeah.
Rather than analyzing the requirements and then constructing the interface and driving the program accordingly. And of course, actually now people are so used to the line that if you give them the real thing, the sentence, they would get confused. But if it started out with a sentence, you would have more usable software. So here are some guidelines which probably are based on Schneiderman's book and some additional piece. And actually, much of this applies to menu structure as well. Because if you say you have a command for inserting a file in your current document, you could have a command, but you could type in instruct and give a filing. Or you could have, as you do, I don't recall right now what the command is, but most likely on the top menu bar you will have an insert with the action, and if you click on that, in a drop down menu you will find different kinds of objects. So insert a symbol, insert a table, insert an image, insert a file, insert, and it's the same structure regardless of how it is implemented. And looking at interfaces where people have to tell a program what to do, this action object model is good, and you would have to create a list of all the possible actions with the software, designer of the software. If you evaluate it, actually it's the same thing, because in one sense evaluation is retracing the design, or maybe not retracing as much, but doing over the design and see whether you, whether based on good design principles you come up with the same interface as the interface of the software you evaluate, and if not, then if you follow good principles, they didn't. So this is this model of objects and actions. As in the copy example before, it should correspond to the way people think. Choosing names and keystrokes is important. Choosing names is a tricky business, because you would normally think choose the name that is most frequent. But it turns out that those are often ambiguous. And sort of choosing good names for actions and types of objects is the same problem as constructing an English language. That it is name for concepts. Yeah, it's the same problem. It's exactly the same problem. And the requirements are that it should be a very well familiar name, and the other requirement is that it should be unambiguous. And those two requirements often clash. And so you may need to come up with your own names. And they did a study of that in word processing. The names that people gave to the actions they did, the terms that occur most often were ambiguous. Like copy actually was ambiguous between copy and move. If you do a file, you can either copy it or you can move it.
And those two different things.
Yes, they're two different things, and people call both of them copy.
Yes, I've heard that too.
I think people are maybe now sufficiently used to that copy is defined uniquely as leave the original where it is and just duplicate it a different place, while move.
I think names at this point is a lot. We're not at the beginning of software development. You know, we've got 40 years worth of software.
Right.
So, and a lot of things were kind of stuck.
Yes.
What's been done, because that's what people will do. And so unless you think you're going to foment a revolution, you better look back at what they did in Unix, what they did in DOS, what they've done in Windows, and stick with it, because otherwise people are going to use your commands wrong forever. So some of the creativity is shot.
Right, so that is part of the what people are used to.
Yeah.
You mentioned the index language, and it occurs to me that that's something sometimes I would like to do, that is when you're trying to figure out how to do something that you don't know what they call it, that when you type in something that it has a thesaurus feature, and it says, do you mean doing this?
Yeah.
Like, do you get this from here to here? And you can say, yes. Instead of guessing what they call, whatever feature.
Yes. This is the problem of recognition versus recall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's even if you want help, how to figure out what they call it. So actually, another piece would be having a hierarchy of different kinds of actions. So you could look into it sort of in a concept-based navigation rather than term-based. So then you see, well, it has to do with copying, or it has to do with making some complex change or whatever it is, and then you can you could go into a hierarchy of pieces. In a way, the help system, because you can do that when you have the content, it gives you some of a hierarchy. So rather than doing a search, you may want to do the content and navigate to the place in that the table of contents for the help that may help that. Okay, so here is your point. Stay close to other command languages, including natural language, except sometimes that conflicts with internal consistency. I probably should find a newer example. This is the consistent structure. This is a database management system, and they had one command for defining a table. And in that system, they had a sort of a logical name for a table and an actual physical file name. They were two different names. And they had one command that says define the new table with the file, and they had another command use for an existing table. And the other would say use file as table. But in the second case, the table name is sort of an alias for the file name that's used in the current session. But the sequence of table and file is reversed. It's the most natural sequence in each case, if you think of natural language. But if you're looking for consistency, natural language is the wrong place to look. It's inconsistent all over the place. And so you have another clash of the requirements. One be close to natural language, the other be consistent. And you then have to check which one wins. For typed-in commands, abbreviations are used are important. So if you use them often, you can do it quickly. And Unix has a long form and a short form. And the of course, there it's a matter to make the short form easy to remember and sort of obvious. And if you know the full command, and you would come up with a short form, the Unix short form should be constructed such that most people, most of the time, would come up with it. Even if they don't specifically remember it, or even if they just do it the first time. A macro is, well, it couldn't say it's a command because it could be invoked with a pressing a button. But it is, in fact, when it's a script of actions, then to do complex macros that really do complex things, somebody will need to go into the macro programming language. So they need to program. And then, of course, you are in command language. As I said, in the action styles, but I think I did say that they could be different interaction styles for different functions, but even in the same operation, you could mix interaction styles. So you could have a command that says insert, and you type it in, and then it will, and if you type in right away insert picture, it would do it. If you just type in insert enter, it would come up with a drop down list and say, well, not drop down, pop up list of possible objects to insert, and you would then select from there. So you can mix and match within one operation different interaction styles. People don't normally think of it that way, but a system where you type in the natural language request is a command language based system. The command language is natural language. Normally people think about command language only as an artificial language. But the principle is the same. You type something in order to regress something on the computer. And so instead of an SQL query, you might type in what's in the bottom of page 31. Now, for a very infrequent user, it may be useful to be able to do that. But I put a question on the bottom of that page 31. If air traffic controllers had to put their requests in these really natural language commands, you'd have a lot of plane crashes. For a while, people sort of thought it was a holy grail that you can interact with a computer system in natural language. It's in most cases not an efficient way to do business. And so when people use anything with any degree of frequency, natural language is not a good thing. And of course, you have the additional problem of ambiguity. I think an example that's often used is, give me all employees in New York. What do you mean? What does this query mean? Employees who live in New York? Employees who work in New York?
Employees in New York State?
That's right, exactly. It's New York. So it's ambiguous. So it's much better to have a reasonably concise language that that lets people input things quickly and unambiguously. Of course it requires some learning, but remember from ease of use, there was the amount of learning and then efficiency of operation after you learned it, which actually is even a little more complex. The field of operation after you learn how much. If you learned half of it, you can do it this quickly. If you learned all of it, you can do it even more quickly. So there's a question of whether investment in learning pays off in labor savings, and that depends on the amount of use. For a piece of software that you use very heavily, it pays to learn a lot, being able to do it quickly, if it lets you do it. But if you have a piece of software that where the only way to tell the computer what you want to do is through menus, which we'll talk about in one second, and clicks with the mouse, you can never achieve the efficiency of shortcut keys. Even if you're willing to learn them. But I think most people have wised up to this problem because you often find the availability of shortcut keys advertised as a desirable feature of a piece of software. So top one, page 32, has another natural language command. By the way, in many interfaces that advertise themselves as natural language, it's actually only a subset of natural language you can understand. Only place things formulated in certain ways. And so then the user has to sort of guess what's allowed and what's not. There's a natural language command, there's the command language equivalent, but you have to know how to type things in and what sequence, And we'll later on, actually, A2 talked about skit, which means things you fill in. And so the skit equivalent example here says, all right, we start with a command. What pops up then is not a menu, but a script. And by script, I mean a template that you fill in. And it could be all there at once, or it could be step by step. So the script could first display the flaw. Then the person fills that in, then it could pop up, then collapse a 2 and you fill that in. In this case, what do you think would be better? First ask for the from and then ask for the 2, or display them both at the same time?
What do you mean?
You have a choice as a designer. If somebody types in copy, you can say, okay, I will next ask them from where they want to copy. And so I'll have a line displayed from where people fill in blanks. And then they press enter, and then I pop up the line with 2, and people fill in blanks. One design option. The other design option is display both lines at once, and the user fills in the blanks. Which is done. In this case.
One at a time.
You think one at a time?
But
I think both at the same.
Yeah.
So other people think both. Why do you think both at the same?
Just because the user knows that there's a two-step there to make it clear that they're copying, I guess. Okay. Sometimes I know users don't know file maintenance and where they're saving to. I'm not working with middle schoolers.
If you show them both at once, it will sort of give the user the whole picture. But otherwise, you take them step by step by step. And it depends on how complex it is. If there are 15 steps, but do you want to show all of that at once or in logical groups of 5 each, and how you want to organize it? I mean, when you do an airline reservation, or sometimes on an e-commerce website, other e-commerce websites, you are led to a script, and they group things. A page, if they're really good, they will say step 1, and the other steps are obvious. So you know you're going to put in your address, and you put in your credit card, and then you're going to give the final okay, and you check it, whatever. So it gives you the overview on top. And it gives them to you in groups. So, what's called a dialog box, a copy user interface, is a script. And there's often an alternative between a dialog box and a pop-up or drop-down menu. And then you have to decide which one to use. A good example for that is entering the state, which is really very annoying. These top-down boxes are annoying.
Especially
Virginia. Yes. Now, why do they do drop-down boxes?
In case you can't remember.
To limit what you can put in.
It will not allow people to make errors. And on the web, if you had an immediate response, so if the website were to monitor as you enter keystrokes, that wouldn't be so bad, because it could immediately tell you. If you type in VB, it would immediately make it red and say no such thing. And since in the United States most people know their state and the abbreviation, it would probably be quicker to have a fill-in box then so it's script, then you have a drop down menu. Now what I think actually I learned last year in this class, I mean I knew you could just type V and at least get into the area of Virginia, but actually you can just hit V again and it will go to the next state after. I mean, if you used to do Vermont and you press V again, that gives you Virgin Islands, and then that gives you Virginia, which is quicker than doing the mouse. But few users know this, and most of them will scroll down, and so it's.
I think you can put like MD sometimes, and it'll go to the M and then the D. So it's like it's giving you the option to type in something that's correct, but if you type in something that doesn't exist, it won't fill it in.
It will just go to the nearest place.
Yeah, I mean that's what it ought. That's what I think it ought to do, is let you type in something, but then if there isn't one of those, it's still one.
Right, but that requires monitoring your keystroke by keystroke, which on a particularly on a slow web connection is not a good idea. So interface design is limited, or has to fit in the physical ability of the device you're using. So a lot of things that you could do for the interface of a program that runs in your machine, or that you could do if the person had access to internet too, at very high communication speed, you cannot do with even a DSL connection. It's too slow. It's too slow for the user. It also, of course, would put a much higher load on the server. Because the way they do it, you fill in this website, and only once you press submit will it communicate again and send back the whole web page. And then that's why they cannot identify errors earlier. They just have to send back a website with the error message. So from a user experience point of view and how the interface would work for the user, you're entirely right. Whether it would fit the technical limitations in the workers is another question. Okay, so we talked about scripts, and there are some dialog boxes in Windows that have more than one thing to fill in. But then of course the e-commerce script, there may be a whole page of stuff to fill in. And when there is no given list of things, clearly the drop down menu option doesn't exist. It also depends on the number of things from which you select. So if you do an author search bibliographic database, they could actually do it with a drop down box, because there is a finite set of authors in that bibliographic database. But would it be a good thing to do? There are too many. So unless they could do what she says with the, would be easier to have the author being typed in. If you really wanted to select from a list, what do they usually do in that case? In the, yes, I mean for a subject, well, they may either do it alphabetically. So for the authors, that would probably be the only way to really do it. Even though it would be an interesting piece to display authors by sort of the type category of person they belong to. I haven't anybody seen do that, but then you could have a list of most famous authors. But they may have a line of characters at the top, and then you click the K, and then within the K you do the drop down box, and you do the.
Yeah, see, I think the drop down menus you have to use kind of sparingly though, because people have to, you know, you said something about like most famous authors, but famous to how and what way? It, you know, it has to be something that people will recognize, like the states. Everybody, I think, knows what, you know, there are these states that you're going to choose from, whereas
right.
famous authors would be, I mean, that would just be your scrolling
yes.
list for people.
Yes. Yes.
So, I mean, it has to be something, I think, that has some
yes.
kind of,
yes.
you know, knowledge, base knowledge.
Right. So, but then they just do it with the, because they still do it with a menu, a hierarchical menu, which
right.
we'll get to momentarily. By the way, I do have to correct myself on the states. When when you get to that page where you fill in the state, there's probably some JavaScript behind it, and the list of states will be on your machine already.
Yeah.
So you could do the type ahead piece. I mean, if you type in Virginia, they could do it technically because it's on your machine now. If you, on the other hand, want to navigate a list of 50,000 authors, that won't be on your machine. It's too much. So they give you that list of characters and then they will load the A authors. And that, even that may be too much. They may load just a subdivision AA to AB and so forth where you further click. But there your method would be even more important. Right? The more elements there are on the list, the more it would be important that you can tie the series of characters and it will go to the place in the list where that where it starts with that series of characters. Okay, menus. So the main characteristic of menus is that the available choices are visible. So you can work with recognition rather than with recall. If you recognize the items, now, if the menu is presented as a series of icons, some icons may be obvious and some may not, and we'll get into that a little bit, but I have to go over and look at the balloons that explain them. Otherwise,
I don't have that rotten option.
Well, so for you, they should have a spoken.
What
piece.
Happens if I bring my cursor down over it? It will say it.
How you go?
So it's like it acts like a mouse, but it often says, "Click on mouse over," and then it tells me what it is.
Okay. So, I mean, this is a, when we talk about user characteristics that are on, to have the interface work in appropriate ways for people who don't see, don't hear, who, there may be other abilities where somebody has some limitations, then you need to the interface accordingly, but there's a first graders can't spell. So an interface that relies on correct spelling of a search term is not good for first graders. In it's just a general machine, we have to look at the ability of the users to do the interface. So the truth be known that we're perfect strip of paper that I told you that you can put on top of your function keys. What's the difference between that and the menu? There is recognition rather than recall. The only difference between that and the menu is that the screen is that in one case you select the option with the mouse, in the other case, you select by pressing a key. But it's still the same. So I'm always looking at sort of what's the essence underneath, and whereas a lot of the discussion stays one level above that analysis. Alright, so I said a few things in page 12, page 32, I'm not going to repeat. But there are a number of ways to look at menus, so a number of facets, if you will, to analyze them. Static versus dynamic. Static is always the same. Dynamic changes. The let me think of a that wouldn't I guess it would be a dynamic menu. If you order wine online and they have this, it's only available in these states. They could, when you input your state, gray out, and your state isn't in there. They could, on the list of states, gray out the list of states which is not available. Yeah. That would be a dynamic menu, changed dynamically. If you have a menu for selecting a file, and you already have said you want to enter the picture there. It may show you only file types that have a picture in them in the directory display. The directory display is a menu. Actually, directory displays are always dynamic menus because they always need to display what's in that directory. Whereas the menu bar on top of the window screen is static, it's always the same. However, what you see, if you click on one of those and you look at the drop-down menu of choices within, that may be dynamic, and they may gray out options that are not available where at the place you're there. So if your cursor is in a table, there are certain other things you can't do, so maybe gray out. Dynamic in that sense. It's also dynamic in the sense that when they have this feature in Windows, which I don't care for myself, where they show only the most frequently used options, uh-huh. which is first determined by default, but if you repeatedly selected something, you have to, and then you have to click on this arrow to see the other options, and if you repeatedly select one of those, then for you, the frequently choice selection is adjusted to include that.
Yeah. Office
2007 percent. Yeah. So I'd rather see them all, and so I go in there, and if I know how to, I'll change the option. There's a preference. It's the only the full. So method of selection, in these may be my terms, direct selection where you point, and symbolic selection where you press a key. Again, the essential characteristic of a menu is that the available options are displayed. So you can see them and you don't have to recall them. Whether you select them by clicking, or whether you select them by pressing a key, it's not a major difference. Pressing the key may be much faster. In Word, most of these drop-down boxes will highlight a character in the option. If you type that character, it works. And now, in Word, I fairly frequently need to paste text as unformatted text. So it takes on the formula there and doesn't import all kinds of stuff. In WordPerfect, I did myself a macro that will do that with a shortcut key. in Word, I haven't done that yet, but I now remember, so I don't actually need the menu, that Alt-E is added, and then S is for Place Special, and then it gives you a pop-up list of different ways, like HTML or unformatted Unicode, unformatted that, and I just press the character U, and sometimes press it twice, and then that. So it's symbolic selection for a menu. Okay. The number of menu elements, some are just binary, some are multiple. If there are more than two items, then there's a question how to arrange them. And the usual need to option is responded alphabetically. But in most cases, some sensible arrangement would be done. That's the A4 menu organization. First of all, people don't know what you call it anyway. So unless you have terms that most people associate with operation, alphabetic sequence is meaningless. If you want to go from English to French and you switch between the two, then you have a different sequence at the time you do it. If some of these menu options are similar, have similar actions like copy or move, we'd be able to have them go together. So you can, what I really mean is copy, not move. And within the list of seven items, even if it was organized random, I think you would still find it as quickly as if you would look for it alphabetically. Yeah. Also, I mean, there may be 13, but if they group, sometimes the grouping could be done by headers. That might be useful. Or you could just do them by spacing. A lot of display that you can just do by the graphical means.
There's been some studies done about how many things people can keep track of in a group.
And yes.
I think it's four digits. That's why they do credit cards in groups of four. I don't know how many menu items it is, but I know the human computer interface people have figured out how many menu items you can.
Well, there's a magic number 5 to 7.
Okay.
Which is what you can easily keep in short-term memory.
Yeah. So if you've got more than that, you better group it into two sets.
You better group it somehow, yeah. Or give it some. But if it's well organized and there's 10, I think people will still. The 5 to 7 is more what you can keep in memory at one time. But by extension, it's what you can easily grasp at one time. So if you have more than 7, then you better have a way for people to grasp it quickly.
Yes. If you want, like your air traffic controllers, you never put more than a certain number, and I don't know the number, in one chunk.
Yes.
The errors go up.
Right.
You do.
Right. And then, of course, if there are still more, then you can do a hierarchically organized menu, which you can actually display in two ways. You could have the short version. Only on the screen, and then you have to click to go to the next level. The problem with that is that the top level headings are often not all that intuitive or clear, and cannot be made such. So that if you are after some specific concept, you may not know whether which of the 10 it falls. Dewey would be sort of everybody knows the Dewey, and they have this. Top 10, do you necessarily know under which main class it falls? If you had one level down, what would be easier? So, in the Yahoo directory, which I think you now have to sort of dig down to actually find, in other directories, they will show you under each main heading the most important subdivisions, which does two things for you. One, if it's one of those important ones you need, you don't need to go to the second screen. And two, it gives you a better sense of what's under that main heading. Now, how does it solve the problem that you cannot grasp 100 things at once? Typography. The 10 or 12 that are on the top level are in big bold letters, and the other ones are small underneath. So your mind first browses the 10, picks one, looks at a little one, that's not the right one, goes to the next one, or I'm here and I click here. Okay. This of course is all limited by screen resolution and by the smallest font that a not visually handicapped person could reasonably read. Sometimes they go too small. And then you just use that. You could also use color background, very light color background. We'll talk about contrast in a little bit, which is one of the most violated principles of good interface design. Getting decent contrast. There's no end of trouble people will go to make their website or their software interface hard to read.
Extended in Pennsylvania, they have the LTV billboards now.
Yeah.
And they've gotten better in the past year, so that they've been practicing with them. But when they first started putting them up, they had a hard time. A lot of the advertisers had a hard time dealing with the change in resolution and getting it to the side. And there'd be some stuff that the print was like, you know, when you're driving by and you're like, I have no idea what that advertising is for, because the print is too small for the resolution of the billboard.
Light yellow print and light blue background.
Yeah, some bright light color in the middle of the day.
So we'll talk about display design and we'll get into that, but here for grouping, you can do sort of boxes with very light pastel backgrounds, pink and green and yellow and blue, and that will absolutely distinguish and group things. If you think about it, a web page with links is a menu, because there are choices. You can select that there and you can fix them. That has been called embedded menu. It's to be, you have a text surrounding the display of the options. Now, there was no name for what's just a plain menu, it's just a choice of display. So I invented skeleton menu. It doesn't give you the text around. The text around might be helpful to explain what the options are and so forth.
Sometimes,
yes. Another aspect is some menus are there all the time. The menu bar and root. Unless you hide it. The toolbar. Some of the things are, I mean, there at least by design permanently. Some of them you can hide. But they would still fall under the classification of a permanent menu. Then there are transient menus that just appear and go away. Sequence of menus, if you need several ones in a sequence, it could be linear, so which is sort of the idea of a script. So if you install software, you need to make a number of selections. There's one menu after the other. In one sense, it's like a script with collective pieces of information in sequence. But in a script, this is how it's usually defined, is you fill in a blank. In this case, you select for a menu option. Or you can have a tree structure. That's what we just discussed. What are terrible for you?
Previews.
I'm not talking about how you display the tree structure. I'm just saying, I mean, if you had people navigate through Dewey, and your first screen shows the 10 main classes, and then you click one, and then it shows the 10 subclasses, that would be a tree structure. No, I think what you're talking about is there is a display of trees called a tree map.
Yes.
And if the idea is to have nested boxes. And some of them I have seen, I would not put an interface. In some cases, it might, some of them on ITDAL, it might be useful, but as she tells you, they are not useful for blind people. They may not be useful for some people who see, because they're not accustomed to that nested boxes metaphor. Okay, so okay, let's see what else is there. There's yeah, menu combined with other interaction styles. I mean, we talked about that before, that you can, there's a mix and match. You may select one menu choice, and before you finish what you do, you will come up, there will be a skit where you have to fill in things, and then you go on from there. Like, maybe menu says, how you want to pay? And that's a drop down box, and you say, I want to pay by check, and then it will give you a screen to fill in some information that will that maybe lets you print out an address label, send a check or whatever, and you put credit card, will give you a script to put different pieces of information on the credit card in. Okay, so there's some guidelines on page 37 from Schneiderman. And actually, I meant to put the new edition someplace in the real bibliography, but I forgot to move it. So the Schneiderman, it's a good book. There are many good books on user interface. The Schneiderman is a good book, and it's the fourth edition. And the only place in these notes where you see the complete citation of that is page 37, sort of plopped in the middle. Just run your eye down through this guidelines to see whether there's any that are not self-explanatory. So the last line is sort of a piece which just Bergamot didn't think. You have a menu displayed, and it shows you shortcut keys for different selections, maybe not all, but some. If you use a shortcut key at that point, it doesn't work.
No.
It only works when the menu is not displayed. Which is, I mean, how stupid can you get?
Yeah, I crashed my Outlook doing that a lot.
Yeah, it's. I mean, somebody who didn't think,
yes,
sort of made that a style, and everybody follows it. You know, one of my favorite quotations from Thoreau, as he applied it to rules of the English language, any fool can make a rule, and every fool will mind it. That's menu. Then there's an interaction style direct manipulation, which actually was a term coined by Schneiderman. And even before that was a sort of recognized interaction style. I remember an old program for the Apple. If somebody wants to do the game construction program, it's called the pinball construction set. And the screen was divided in two pieces. One piece would be the pinball game, and the other piece on the side would have sort of a box with many different gadgets you can put in the pinball game. Flippers, and they could be at different places, and they have these little triangles that of working like if they had a rubber band slipped around, if something hits it, the mark hits it, it's deflected. And many different kinds of things like that. And you actually didn't have a mouse at that point, they had paddles, but a cursor moving device. And you could move the cursor, could pick up one of these things and put them in the place where you wanted them. Direct manipulation. If you drop and drag, but the other way, drag and drop, pick up and drag and then drop, that's direct manipulation. So if you copy a file from one place to another, the only problem with direct manipulation for moving files from one directory to the other, actually, see, I said moving, copying. What's the problem?
Knowing whether it's going to leave a copy there and copy it, or whether it's going to move it and still only have one copy.
And the default is to move it. Which I'm not sure is the best default. The default is to move it. If you use the left mouse button, if you are right-handed, to do the pick up and drag and drop, then a menu will pop up and ask you what action you want to take. So whether you want to move or copy. And I always do that because otherwise I don't know what it does.
Isn't that the button you usually use, or do you use the
right mouse button?
Right click
usually. Yeah.
Normally
your left click.
Yeah, so right click gives you the choice of copy, move,
or... Oh, okay, because that usually brings up a...
On
Windows. Right click.
Okay. Well, okay, whichever.
I would have to...
Maybe
there's a default,
and
it doesn't change.
Because
you can change it.
Oh, no, right. Yes, right click, sorry.
Yeah.
I misspoke. I think in reading I have no problem. In other things, I think I'm just a little bit dyslexic. So I will turn around two numbers in a phone number, two digits in a phone number very easily. So yes, right click. We'll do that. And it's a very useful thing, the right click is. Because in many circumstances it's good. So why the Apple people think that a single button mouse is so much better, I don't understand. But anyway, the other direct manipulation things. Say if you wanted to change the column width in a table, there's two options you have. You can use the mouse and drag it. Or you can, if you know how to, bring up a script interface where you can enter the width of the column. And of course, the direct manipulation is easier, but less precise. It jumps. So if you really have to do fine manipulation so that you adjust the columns so in each row, in each cell, the content you have will just fit. Sometimes that discrete movement is just too much to get just the point where it works. So actually it violates the continuous representation. Because when you drag it, it jumps. Very small increments. So when it doesn't matter whether it's a 1/100th of an inch off, then the dragging is fine. If not, it may be problematic. The other is dragging a selection from one place to another. Where again the option you have the option of doing it this way, or you have the option of doing it through commands, in effect, pressing Control C, using the arrow keys or the find command to move to where you want to move, to move the cursor do you want to check to be, and then paste it. By the way, another principle I should have mentioned at the very beginning. Not only can, within the same function, you mix and match when doing the same operation, you can use different interface styles within accomplishing that one task. There are often options of different interaction styles for the same task. As we just saw some examples. Script versus direct manipulation, command versus direct manipulation. So what's generally actually let's do, can you think of another example of direct manipulation?
A lot of the a lot of times when you can put photos and stuff, you can resize similar to the table thing.
Right, right.
PowerPoint, moving around things.
Moving out in the PowerPoint, so there's lots of examples of direct manipulation. And for many purposes, it's clearly highly useful.
Google Maps, that was the big one. Google Maps came out with that, and you could click and move.
Yeah. You can also get it from very specific to very general, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
And not have to, whereas with, I think MapQuest has changed, but before Google Maps came out, you had to click, you know, over and wait for it to completely reload.
Okay.
Right. So it was a time thing, and patience.
Okay, so a graphic user interface is sort of an overall pattern or combination of features those are some of the features I think that all that together may make a graphic user interface. Usually a model box of windows that can be opened and closed if needed. In at least to the extent that you have menus popping up, or that you have drop-down buttons, which each is a separate window. It's heavily based on menus, and often both actions and objects are represented by icons. Doesn't need to be, but often they are. Pull-down menus, pop-up menus, dialog boxes, that is scripts as we saw it, okay, and direct manipulation. So they will use the way interactions are specified is usually within that space. And they may have some command language features at some point, but it's mostly that. So shortcut keys wouldn't be necessary to make it a graphic user interface. But if shortcut keys were the only way of interacting, it would not be a graphic user interface. Okay. As I said before, it would still be highly useful for any graphic user interface to also enable interaction with shortcut keys. So combining many interaction styles and giving users choices which ones they wanted. And most users will eventually, most savvy users will eventually use shortcut keys for the operations they do often. And use just a graphic interaction with menus for things they don't remember and they don't use that often. Okay, so there are some parameters by which all these interaction styles can be characterized. The first and maybe most important is how much information on available choices or actions that at this point might make sense is presented to the user. Okay. So, actually, it's sort of interesting that in search engines, the script interaction has way overtaken menu based interaction. Because Google doesn't tell you anything what you should search on. It gives you a blank box, type something. It's a script to put something. Whereas a directory presents you with options of what you might want to search for. Right? So, characterized by the amount of information available on what are the actions. In Google, there is none. Unless you open, I mean, if you open the advanced search string, then you're told you could put a URL, you could and you could put a domain, may not be quite the right word, you could define a subset of the web you want to search by giving some piece of the URL, which may just be EDU. And the other thing that tells you you could do, but the simple search doesn't tell you anything. By the way, if you're a savvy user, you can limit by domain in the simple search. Yeah. But I don't remember what the prefix is. See, I don't do this often. If I do this often, I would remember. I think it's URL colon, maybe. I'm not sure. Whatever. But you can do a prefix colon and put this domain name in there, and it will limit it to that. So if you're a really savvy user, you have all the power of advanced search in simple search, and you can probably do it more quickly there. If you're a completely unsavvy user, you don't even know that advanced search exists, and you just don't use those possibilities. If you're in between, you have to get the mental gratis user of the advanced search screen to do the other options. Then the second parameter is the method of data input. We talk about symbolic data input from the keyboard, direct selection. Actually, sort of tricky is direct selection could be from the keyboard. So if you select from a menu that is given as a strip put over the function keys, I would still call that direct selection. Where symbolic selection, you have, well, or maybe they're both at the same time. I don't know what it boils down to. If you have the strip there, it works like a menu in terms of what information is available for you to look at. In selection, if it's keyboard, it's more symbolic. That's it. Direct selection would be by clicking on the thing
from a list.
But you see, what if you have one of these tablets?
And usually, you can't define it.
Right. Okay. So let me do the tablet, and then just direct manipulation.
Yeah.
So within these things, I mean, she's right. You sort of have to at first ignore the cases that defy your scheme. In one of the cases defies the scheme, if you have actually one thing we did not let me do the tablet first and then the touch sensitive screen. So if you have a touch tablet and it displays menu choices on that tablet, so what's the difference between touching the menu choice there and touching a key on the keyboard? And of course then when you have a touch sensitive thing, is that like keyboard or like mouse? In the end it probably doesn't matter how you define that, but there are still those two parameters of, and the more important one is how much information is displayed and what you can do at this point. And there's some importance to how you select, because the keyboard selection may be quicker than the mouse. And direct manipulation for many things may be much more intuitive. May also, for some cases, faster. For some, slow. And that may depend on what's being done and who does it. I mean, some people zoom around with a mouse and speak so quickly I couldn't do it. And they may be faster that way than I'm on the keyboard. And they may be slower on the keyboard. So it's what's better among these options depends on what needs to be done and who does it and what their capabilities are. Okay. Let's do a break and reconvene at 10:35. And we'll rapidly go through the rest of this. Well, actually, no, we're in good time, actually. We're going through that faster. You don't ask enough questions. So that will go at whatever speed you think is comfortable. Thank you. I'm going to have to find my position for my desk. Okay. End of this lecture.